Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 15th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Expelled Mashonaland West ZANU-PF Provincial Chairperson Themba Mliswa says he will win the Urungwe West parliamentary by-election set for June 11 despite violent activities he claims are being perpetrated by ruling party supporters.
This is where I think I agree with MDC, that the electoral reforms are not in place. And why would one really sensible enough want to stand elections in Zimbabwe when the reforms are not in place?
The situation remains tense in Durban with fears of xenophobic attacks gripping Gauteng province in South Africa following the death of more than 17 people in the violence targeting foreigners.
The people in Zimbabwe are very angry, to say the least. And one of the things that people are saying is South Africa cannot forget quickly what Zimbabwe did to assist South Africa to fight apartheid.
And the cash-strapped Harare government says it is looking for $5 million to compensate Tokwe Mkose flood victims who are now being relocated for the third time beginning next week.
Expelled Mashonaland West ZANU-PF Provincial Chairperson Themba Mliswa says he will win the Urungwe West parliamentary by-election set for June 10th despite violent activities he claims are being perpetrated by ruling party supporters. Mliswa, who lost his seat after he was recalled by ZANU-PF, told journalists in Harare today that there is need for democratic reforms in the country where there is an uneven electoral field.
This is where I think I agree with MDC, that the electoral reforms are not in place. And why would one really sensible enough want to stand elections in Zimbabwe when the reforms are not in place? I decided from the onset that I would not have a meeting in my constituency, and there's no point, and that I made very, very clear. There's no point. One, the violence aspect. On our way back with the police, a young man who was standing next to me was beaten up by ZANU-PF youth. He was in pain. We couldn't stop because we were under arrest, so we sadly had to drive past him, and he tried to wave, which again is another sad part of this nation, where the higher youth, they come and beat a youth in that area, and the police stand and watch.
Mliswa said he will stop campaigning in the constituency as his supporters are being threatened by ZANU-PF supporters. He was arrested recently for allegedly causing disturbances in Urungwe West, a claim he dismissed as baseless. Mliswa is among some ZANU-PF officials who were expelled for allegedly attempting to topple President Robert Mugabe before the ZANU-PF Congress last December. Others who were expelled from the party include former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, former Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa, and several others.
Meanwhile, the ZANU-PF Blawai province today finalized its list of five candidates who will contest in the parliamentary by-elections scheduled for 10th June, ahead of the sitting of the nomination court tomorrow. The by-elections follow the expulsion of 17 former MDCT legislators and two former ZANU-PF legislators from parliament. Bulawayo is the only province in the country in which to date the ruling party has never won a parliamentary seat since the 2002 harmonized elections after the formation of the MDC in 1999. Some MDCT members have reportedly protested the party's decision to boycott the by-elections nationally and believe some parliamentary seats, especially in MDCT strongholds, will be merely donated to ZANU-PF. The ZANU-PF parliamentary candidates for Bulawayo are Ntando Yenkosi Mulilo, Joseph Chuma, Godfrey Malawa, Maide Impala, and retired Colonel Chinga Dube, who will contest in Luveve, Pelanda Bampopoma, Pumula, Lubengula, and Makokoba, respectively. Dube tells reporter Standikile Mhlanga more about the elections.
In the past, the people were not voting for the candidate, but they were voting for the party. They just made up their mind that they were going to vote either MDC or ZANU-PF. But now people are beginning to appreciate that, you see, people are different. And it's not just the name of the party, but the people behind the name of the party. If you elect a candidate, he must be a servant. He must be somebody who is prepared to do some work for you, not just for the sake of the name.
The previous election results shows that your party is usually beaten by this wide margin by the MDCT in Bulawayo. Has this margin narrowed, or you are confident of winning because of the MDCT boycotting the elections?
In the past, if you were MDC, it doesn't matter. You didn't have to say, you didn't need to campaign. Just name MDC was enough to get you elected. But now people have realized that it is more than just that. They've given them enough chance and found they've not done them any good at all. This is why people are now beginning to vote for ZANU-PF.
That was retired Colonel Chinga Dube, ZANU-PF parliamentary candidate for Makokoba, on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Meanwhile, former MDC team members who formed the MDC renewal team say they are currently holding a meeting to decide if they should contest the elections as independents or as United MDC, which is the name registered with the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Party official Albert Mhlanga, who will contest in Pumula Bulawayo, says whatever the outcome of the meeting, his party has resolved that the former legislators who were recently expelled by the MDCT in Parliament will contest in the oncoming by-elections.
The situation remains tense in Durban, with fears of xenophobic attacks gripping Gauteng province, which also encompasses Johannesburg in South Africa, following the death of more than 17 people in the violence targeting foreigners. In the port city of Durban, some foreigners have armed themselves with machetes and knives in an effort to protect themselves against marauding South Africans who are at times burning people alive. In the country's largest business city, Johannesburg, most foreign-owned shops were closed for business today in fear of the xenophobic attacks, as some local vigilante groups patrolled the street ready to attack foreigners.
This comes at a time the government and ruling African National Congress Party say the violence is being perpetrated by criminals. Indications are that South Africans say foreigners are grabbing all local jobs, and they also own most small businesses in all cities and towns, a situation they claim is discouraging the economic empowerment of black South Africans.
Social media is playing a central part in issuing alerts and informing Zimbabweans in South Africa where xenophobic attacks are happening. Some Zimbabweans in the diaspora are also planning to demonstrate at South African embassies in the following days to signal their disgruntlement at what is happening in South Africa. In Zimbabwe, some rights activists met today to plan peaceful demonstrations at the South African embassy to register their concern about the current violence in that country. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye caught up with Nyaradzo Mashamombe and Nyasha Komboni in South Africa to give us their take on the issue.
The people in Zimbabwe are very angry, to say the least. And one of the things that people are saying is South Africa cannot forget quickly what Zimbabwe did to assist South Africa to fight apartheid. To that, people have taken to social media to speak against this on the hashtag No Xenophobia. I'm actually just coming from a meeting where the civil society is trying to have a march to the South African embassy. There is a number of plans that are in place, but one of the things that we are hoping for is to have a march soon, maybe on Friday, to speak against the South African treatment of our sisters and brothers. Another thing that's happening is there's been a call to not buy any product from South Africa, because then what we're saying is they're not respecting the fact that Zimbabweans and other African countries are buying their goods and giving them money. So there's a call for boycott of products, and also to boycott the South African shows that are going on. With
Nyasha, what is the situation there in Johannesburg?
In Joburg, the situation was a bit tense today. In the morning, they're trying to attack and loot the Pakistanian shops in Joburg CBD. And then apparently those guys were warned yesterday by some message which was circulating on WhatsApp. So it's more like they were ready for them. For us Zimbabweans, it's a bit tricky because people are really scared, because we've had some instances when people try to demonstrate or something and then we find that the police will come and maybe we shoot. We've been trying to regroup like on social media to try and do something, but people are really scared.
That was Nyasha Komboni, a Zimbabwean in South Africa, and Nyaradzo Mashamombe of Tege Life Foundation in Harare, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye. Stay tuned for more as we speak to a top ANC official about this issue.
It was a very good lubricant for the whole revolution. It was the healer, it was the deliverer of every message from the boys in the war, boys in the rear, and the comrades in the front with their supporting marching. Music was the highest politicizer or teacher of the whole revolution.
The cash-strapped Harare government says it is looking for $5 million to compensate Tokwe Mkosi flood victims who are now being relocated for the third time beginning next week. Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister Shvaima Hofer says government has identified 7 farms for relocating the people in batches. More than 20,000 villagers were moved from the Tokwe Mkosi basin when it flooded. They were first moved to Chingwizi and later to Nwanensi Ridge in Mashingo Province. Villagers have been complaining about being tormented by a swarm of mosquitoes, vicious snakes and scorpions in the expansive forests. Last week, Mashingo Provincial Medical Director Robert Mujgiratima confirmed 2 cases of cholera have been detected at Chingwizi Camp. Maofa tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that transport has been secured and relocation starts in days.
Yeah, sure. We have planned to reallocate them in 7 farms. Some of the farms are already checked. As I was there yesterday, we agreed that they are going to those places, but they will be helped to be carried to their places. Another donor who is going to help us.
Who is this donor who is working with the government on this project?
No, I haven't collected the full story, but I already have the name and files of this city coming from local government. That's where we donated that. But anyhow, if you want to hear about it, you can phone me tomorrow morning. I'll give you the all details. So we have made sure that where they are going, water is filtered and toilets. Fortunately enough, there is a donor who is directed money for sanitation.
What about the issue of compensation? The government for years has been claiming that it is cash-strapped, and as a result, it has been struggling to meet some of its obligations.
About the 50% of the people were previously given the compensation. The one left, we as government will be paying half of the left one, and we finish the last quarter after we again collect money.
Mashingo Provincial Affairs Minister Shvaima Hofer speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Mashingo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Zimbabwean youth living in the diaspora express mixed views on country's independence.
And the ruling South African National Congress speaks out on xenophobic attacks in that country. Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A former star player in the U.S. National Football League has been convicted of first-degree murder in a shooting incident nearly 2 years ago. A jury in the U.S. state of Massachusetts found Aaron Hernandez guilty today in the case involving the slaying of 27-year-old Odin Lloyd, who was dating the sister of Hernandez's fiancée.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani says Iran is in talks to reach a final nuclear agreement with six world powers, not with the U.S.
Islamic State fighters captured more territory outside the capital of Iraq's Anbar province today, residents and local officials said.
And Cuba is praising U.S. President Barack Obama's decision to remove the Caribbean island nation from Washington's list of state sponsors of terrorism.
You are listening to Studio 7 coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. For young Zimbabweans living in the diaspora, events marking historical periods like the country's Independence Day can often be overshadowed by similar celebrations in their adopted nations. But for some Zimbabweans, their history runs deep and the relevance of independence remains strong. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to some young Zimbabweans living in the diaspora about the country's independence from colonial rule.
April 18th, does this day really serve a purpose for the country's citizens living in the diaspora? 28-year-old Tsungi Gotora, who lives in the state of Texas in America and was born in the USA but raised and schooled in Zimbabwe, says she has pride in her history, but she says being back in America has barred her from properly marking Independence Day.
Ever since I've been here in the U.S., I acknowledge the day, but I never celebrated it because where I used to live in New Mexico, I was the only Zimbabwean there on campus.
Gotora says her knowledge of not only Zimbabwe's history, but that of Africa has made her to understand about the continent and beyond.
For me, I actually majored in history for my A-levels. I did history my whole 6 years in high school. So the more I learn about history, the more I understood where, like, not just Zimbabwe, but any other African country, how they got to be and where they are right now.
Munyaradzi Munochiwe, assistant professor of history at the College of Holy Cross in the state of Massachusetts in the United States, was born in April 1980. Munochiwe says, though living in the diaspora, independence for him serves as a point of reflection on the past, present, and future of Zimbabwe.
For most Zimbabweans, of course, Zimbabwean independence is relevant regardless of the difficult journey that has characterized our country for the past 3 decades and a half.
Professor Munochiwe says that remains the single hardest challenge in the diaspora as children growing up in foreign nations aren't learning about their history, culture, and traditions. And as a father of 4 young children, Munochiwe says the burden is on the larger Zimbabwean community.
Think about it. I mean, everyone in the world feels a very strong impulse to belong somewhere. And for immigrants like Zimbabweans, no matter where you live, you always feel that same impulse. And when I teach my children of the Zimbabwean past, these lessons are always about reminding them that they are Zimbabwean, even though they live in a different country.
For some, growing up in the diaspora, like Chido Kututwa, says having other Zimbabweans, including his own father, allowed him to have a greater understanding of the significance of the country's independence.
When we go to church, they teach us our history of how we were, and my father as well is a very strict Zimbabwean. So he told me everything about Zimbabwe. That's how I got to know everything about Zimbabwe.
Down under in Perth, Australia, Stephen Chifunde, a Zimbabwean who has spent years in the country, says for many, independence is a communal celebration.
There's a lot of Zimbabweans living in Australia and everywhere else in the world. It's a rare thing, you know, we just have to come together, just be one people.
Chifunde says being Zimbabwean in most countries means something, whether good or bad, but a person must never shy away from that.
It's better to have something that you bring to the table from your own culture, and it's easier when you understand where you come from, you know, to be who you are.
But for others, Independence Day bears a reminder of the sad struggles Zimbabweans are facing back home and why some are living in the diaspora. Anesu Ruodo, a Zimbabwean living in Washington, says she understands independence as a celebration of freedom, despite the fact that for younger Zimbabweans, learning their history is at times confusing.
Especially now with the current situation in Zimbabwe, you don't see much of the freedom. I don't think they'll really understand what it means to have Independence Day.
Ruodo says for many like her, Independence Day is just like any other day.
It is relevant because I know it's Independence Day for Zimbabwe and it's the day that we celebrate freedom. But right now, it doesn't seem much to me. It's just any other day when you're in the diaspora.
Although April 18th may appear like an ordinary day for some Zimbabweans living in the diaspora, it still remains a big day to some millions back home, even if they're grappling with a harsh socioeconomic political environment. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Tatenda Gumbo. Africans are liberated in Zimbabwe.
Communications manager of the African National Congress, Keith Koza, says the current xenophobic attacks in that country are hurting millions of people in Africa. Koza says the violence that has left more than 17 people killed and others injured is shameful, as the ANC was helped by various nations, including Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi, Tanzania, and others to fight against the settler apartheid regime. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the attacks should stop immediately.
The problems of xenophobia in our country, it has a variety of sources. If you trace each incident, you find a different slant to the story. For instance, there's been accusations that people from outside of South Africa have taken over business from South Africans. In some instances, there are issues of crime that is blamed on foreigners and so on. And so the key issue for us is that in either case, whether it's a crime or issue of business, is that South Africans must work with foreigners. If they're doing better in business, it means there is a case for us to learn from them. And secondly, instances of crime is that you can't blame every foreigner for a crime incident. If there are elements amongst foreigners who are criminals, it's a matter that police would need to deal with to apprehend those people and put them behind bars.
We see that there's this issue of small business owners who are actually complaining. Give us an insight of exactly what they're talking about here.
Well, we've got a sizable number of people from Pakistan in particular and Somali who have moved into many townships where they buy out local shop owners and run those little shops. Now, people who find it difficult to compete with them have leveled all sorts of accusations that they sell expired goods and lower the prices and thus get them out of business and so on. And when it was dealt with by the Minister of Small Business Development, she said, let us, instead of isolating these people, get closer to them and learn how do they make their business do well to a point where they become so competitive.
When we look at some of the people that are being attacked, there are some Zimbabweans, there are some Zambians, Malawians, and these people, Mr. Khoza, I think you know that some of them helped the ANC in actually fighting apartheid. So what could be your comment there?
Well, it is said that we have these attacks on South Africa precisely because of the point you are making. At the height of our struggle, we were received with warm hands in countries like Tanzania, Zambia. We operated from Mozambique, operated from Lesotho, operated from Botswana, and some people were even trained in countries like Nigeria and so on. So we have received support from the international community that made it possible for us to attain our liberation. And that's why, as the ANC, we find it strange that South Africans today would have a problem with foreigners as if we have never been in that situation before.
So now, Mr. Khoza, there are some people who are saying that the ANC has taken time to react to these violent activities.
No. The ANC has always reacted from the very first incident of xenophobia. ANC has been on the platform and calling people to desist from entertaining xenophobic tendencies. The ANC has condemned all forms of violence. We've even used our structures on the ground to try and defuse the situation. We have called on police to act against those that are behind xenophobic attack. At no stage was the ANC quiet when these things happened.
And now, Mr. Khoza, what is the way out of this kind of situation?
There is a groundswell process of mobilization in areas that are affected by ANC structures and ANC-led government to engage communities and discourage them. But that's the first thing. The second thing is, of course, to ensure that the police act and act decisively.
That was Keith Khoza, communications manager of the ruling African National Congress of South Africa, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In recent weeks, there have been numerous deadly attacks against Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement aid workers in Syria, Yemen, and Mali. In Syria, two volunteers with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent were shot and killed as they were retrieving bodies of the deceased and preparing shelters for people fleeing the fighting. 50 Red Crescent volunteers have now lost their lives since the beginning of the conflict in Syria. In Yemen, two clearly identified Red Crescent workers were shot and killed in the southern port city of Aden while evacuating wounded people to a waiting ambulance. These killings followed the death of another Yemen Red Crescent volunteer in Al Dali province, also while evacuating the wounded earlier in the week. In Mali, an international committee of the Red Cross staffer was killed in an attack on a clearly marked aid truck near Gao. The United States strongly condemns the reprehensible attacks against Red Cross Red Crescent Movement staff and volunteers, said Acting State Department spokesperson Marie Harf. The United States reminds all armed groups of the obligations under international humanitarian law to respect and protect civilian personnel engaged in humanitarian efforts, and calls on all parties to ensure their unimpeded access to people in need of assistance. Attacks against innocent civilians and aid organizations by any armed actors, including national armies like the Syrian regime, are unacceptable and must not be permitted by the international community. Impartial and neutral humanitarian organizations must be allowed to continue their critical, life-saving work, free from threats from any armed actors. In a statement, the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement called on all parties involved in conflict zones to respect its aid workers and guarantee their safety and unimpeded immediate access to people in need. The United States maintains an ironclad commitment to assisting those impacted by the conflicts in Syria, Yemen, and around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about xenophobic attacks targeting foreigners in South Africa.
And now a quick recap of today's top stories.
Expelled Mashonaland West ZANU-PF Provincial Chairperson Themba Mliskwa says he will win the Wurungwe West parliamentary by-election set for June 10 despite violent activities he claims are being perpetrated by ruling party supporters.
The situation remains tense in Durban with fears of xenophobic attacks gripping Gauteng province.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night.